Everyone, welcome to our final episode of Spartan Ops episode one, or season one, sorry. This is going to be our last coverage episode. We will have episodes after this, of course, talking about some more Spartan Ops related stuff. But as far as the actual episodes go, this is our final one. We are at number 10. We are at the end. How does it feel to be here?
Ooh.
Sal, it took us a while, but we finally got through all 10 episodes.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy to be here and sad to be here at the same time. You know, it's nice to actually get it done, but then, I don't want to see it go.
Yeah, I wish there was still some more Spartan Ops stuff to come, but who knows? Probably further down the line, we may see some more Spartan Ops stuff come down the pipeline.
I hope so.
So,
The bulletin didn't, kind of gives you a clue, though. I had mentioned that to you yesterday, that in the bulletin there's a Q&A session, the Halo bulletin I'm talking about on Waypoint for everyone. And one of the questions was regarding Season 2, and Frank O'Connor said there were essentially, I can't remember it exactly, but there were no immediate plans, but that won't be the last you will hear of Majestic and Crimson. So, I'm going to take that at face value and not try and read into it. I'm hoping we'll get something before Halo 5. If not, geez, if we have to wait till Halo 5 for a season 2, that's a long wait. But, we'll see what transpires.
Yeah, that's quite a ways off.
In the meantime,
I'm not sure I can wait that long.
Well, in the meantime, I mentioned this, I believe, last week, but here's a mention, if you don't mind. Now that I know that for sure, at least for the immediate future, the web series that I've been working on, that I've been developing, it's called Mac Rounds. First of all, let me back up here. Mac Rounds means Majestic and Crimson, so it's the further adventures of those two fire teams after Requiem. And I was holding off a bit on this because I wanted to see if there was going to be a season two, to know which direction I could head with this. If there was going to be a season two, in the near future, then I was going to have to basically watch and follow their stories and then do my episodes so that they, surrounding those kind of, so that they wouldn't, break continuity. But now that I know there's not going to be a season two, at least in the immediate future, I can kind of do what I want. I'm not going to veer too far off of what would be, expected of Spartan teams and missions and so on. But I'll be able to kind of do my own thing then. So that's going to be fun. I do want to mention regarding that, for those that were interested and those that might be interested, this Saturday, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern time, I'll be holding a meeting regarding all the events of Mac Rounds, what is planned out. If you want to be a part of the cast, or maybe you might consider writing for it or so on, hit me up either through my blog. You can email me at sal@halofanforlife.com. You can check me out on Twitter. Just look up Halo Fan for Life. And of course, you can check me out on Xbox. Gamer tag is Halo Fan for Life 1. Unfortunately, somebody had that gamer tag without the one. Can you believe it?
Aww.
Yeah. So, I'd like to see, people show up or contact me or whatever. I've already got a decent enough crew. I think I've got about 12 people in various roles. Dust, you've been kind enough to say you'd help me out some with some video stuff, and I appreciate that. I'll try not to bug you too much there.
I'm pretty much open for anything, body actor, voice actor, post-production, anything.
That'd be fantastic.
Yep.
And one more quick mention, if you don't mind, and then we can get into it. I recently got a deal with a company called Fatheads. Folks might be familiar with them as the company that does the large wall graphics, or the removable, they're kind of like stickers, not really stickers, but they're removable wall graphics. Well, they have Halo Fatheads, and they actually contacted me. I was kind of surprised. I was very happy by it, about promoting on my site. So between now and April 20th, I'm going to have 4 trivia contests. Each one of those, well, there'll be a trivia question, and then if you're the winner of that, you'll receive one of their mini sets. It's not small by all means. It's about half the normal size. The normal size of their sets run between 6 and 7 feet tall. So these junior sets, as they call them, are roughly about half that, and they're about a $40 value. But like I said, I'll be getting 4 of those from them to give away. And then also the week of April 14th through the 20th, there's going to be a code through my site. So if you want to get Fatheads, you can save 30% off through the code through my site. So it'll be a way to save some money and get those. If you're not familiar with what they are, check out fathead.com, look up their Halo products, and then wait for the sale, or watch my site for the contest.
Very cool.
Okay. Enough of my shameless plugging there.
Yes. You and your shameless plugs.
I know.
To the conclusion. Well, almost. Almost the conclusion.
Almost.
To the last episode, playable episode of Spartan Ops Season 1. We enter Exodus. And of course, by Exodus, hopefully we, that indicates something at the end here. But the UNSC Infinity must escape a deadly trap. And that trap? Well, you're about to find out as we enter the first and, yeah, pretty much the first cutscene for, or this is actually the cinematic piece for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually probably the shortest one out of all the cinematics that we've had in Spartan Ops so far, actually.
It is.
I mean, there's not really much to say at the very end. We are kind of at a tipping point here of whether or not we actually defeat Jewel and his oppression, with him actually having a piece of the Janus key, and then having Halsey captured, and then us trying to free ourselves from this subspace tether that's somehow tying the UNSC to Requiem, or the Infinity to Requiem. So there's a couple of things going on here. Hopefully we'll wrap up some ends on this final episode. But for the cutscene, we see one of the elites carrying Halsey off to one of the phantoms that they have ready to lockup. So
her shoulder all bloody
from being shot by Spartan Commander Palmer, and that was all great and everything. I'm sure she's happy about that. In the meantime, we see Jewel standing over by a panel of some kind of looking over the half of the Janus key that he managed to snatch from Dr. Halsey. And he gives the order to start evacuating everybody. And I guess the person there is kind of like a, I don't know what class he is. You know the classes better than I do.
You mean the elite there?
Yeah, some kind of peon grade.
Yeah, he's just a minor elite.
Yeah, so.
He's a minor.
So Jewel tells the minor that, tell everyone to start evacuating Requiem, and whoever gets left behind is going down with Requiem. Which, we're not exactly sure what that means. That could be several things. Could be self-destruct, could be implosion, could be, I don't know, quite a number of things. So
something really crazy. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. So he punches some symbols on this console, and once he hits the center button, basically the enter button, he starts to walk off, and this Didac symbol actually is rotating on top of the panel that he just hit.
It's very cool imagery there.
Yeah, he's basically, I mean, he has the name Didac's hand, so he's essentially kind of taken over the role of the Didac in a sense, because he's been able to command all of the Prometheans that have been on Requiem thus far. And the fact that that symbol showed up when he executed that command, whatever it is, pretty much seems like he kind of took over the Didact's place. Because we still don't know if the Didact's actually dead or what happened to him, other than the fact that he fell into that slipspace well.
Oh. We're gonna
It's likely he's dead.
But which Didact? That's important.
We already know. We already know it's the Ur-Didact.
Yes. I think he's dead.
I think he's dead too.
I mean, what he falls into, or, you know, first of all, he fell a really long distance, you know, a far distance. And then, you know, that whatever that power stream, you know, cyclonic thing was going on there. Yeah, it'd be hard to believe that he would survive that.
So I'm not sure. I mean, maybe he's been composed, in which case he's already screwed anyways.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get into it too much. That's a whole other discussion that we could go speculate on. back on Infinity, we have Vlasky, Dr. Glassman, and Roland looking over the map that Crimson found from the last place that Dr. Halsey's signal actually went off of. And when they went around activating all the panels, they found this map. And just so happens that this map also kind of corresponds to one of the maps that was recovered from Geck when Thorne and Glassman were escaping. And thanks to Dr. Glassman, they've been able to piece together what these maps mean. And it turns out there's two other artifacts on Requiem that is tied into this artifact that has been giving the UNSC trouble on Infinity for the longest time, ever since the beginning of the game, or beginning of this season. And it's this physical slipspace tether, so to speak, that they kind of found out what really was going on. What was it, episode 8?
I think so.
Was that when Halsey found out that? Yeah, I think it was episode 8. Or it's 7 or 8, one of the two. I can't.
It's hard to keep
track. Eight. Yes, it's 8. Okay. I just thought about it. It's 8. So Dr. Glassman is able to figure out that there's these two other artifacts identical to the one on Infinity. And that if they deactivate those, then it should free Infinity from Requiem so they can get out of there. So after they kind of talk this over a little bit, Glassman and Lasky contact Palmer and the rest of Fireteam Majestic, tell them the news of what needs to be done, that these two artifacts need to be taken offline. She says her and the rest of Fireteam Majestic will go get one artifact and has Roland call up Crimson to go get the other one. Just after the little talk over Majestic's head, we see this huge fleet of Covenant just start to basically move out of Requiem. Back on the ship.
It's like they're all on these alarms. Exodus or something.
Yeah. You know? I wonder, that Exodus thing is starting to hold a little more weight now. Back on Infinity, we have Lasky responding to some alarms of all this Covenant movement. Immediately, Roland's like, they're not coming to attack us. They're entering slipspace. They're leaving. And of course, Lasky's like, oh, this isn't good. This really is not good. And a few seconds later, there's a big jolt on Infinity. It doesn't take long for Dr. Glassman and Roland to figure out it's not Infinity that's moving, but it's actually the entire planet of Requiem. Holy crap.
Yeah.
And it just so happens the planet is moving towards the star.
Crash course with the star. My God.
So the thing
that... You can't get much more final than that.
No. So the thing that Jewel did on his little control panel thing actually sent Requiem on a crash course towards Requiem's star. And it just so happens that the slipspace tether, that thing that's physically keeping Infinity constantly floating above the certain spot on Requiem, is pulling Infinity along with it. Not good.
Definitely not good. Now, here's a question, real quick, before we get too much further.
Uh-huh.
All you saw in the cinematic here, how many ships Jewel had. And you don't really see a UNSC fleet. All you really see is the Infinity. Now, I know it's a big ship, but one of Jewel's ships was huge as well. So why wouldn't they have been attacking Lasky? I don't get it. You know, well, why wouldn't they have attacked the Infinity? That was a lot of ships. You know, maybe it was all of Jules' armada, but still, I'm sure they could have taken out the Infinity if they all tried. I was a little taken aback by that. At the very least, you know, we should have been able to see a UNSC armada as well. But I don't know.
Well, I mean, we did stave them off already from invading the Infinity once before, so they probably are like, screw that. We'll just let them follow along with Requiem.
Well, yeah, but
because they couldn't take them out that last time.
Specific moment. I meant like earlier on. You know, now that we've seen how many ships they actually had, they could have taken on the Infinity again. You know, but I guess going back to, you know, like what you were referring, that first battle, they did kind of get their butts handed to them. So, you know, and that probably is the extent of Jules' fleet. So he doesn't want to have it whittled down any further.
Right. And of course, Infinity is using Forerunner technology, which is, believe it or not, superior to the Covenant's, even though the Covenant adapt Forerunner technology to their own. But the fact that Infinity is still tied together to Requiem, and Jewel probably knows this, They're not going to stay behind and try to kill the ship when they're certain that it's doomed along with Requiem.
Sure.
So they just are. They probably received the order to evacuate and leave, so they left. I mean, like Jules said, anyone that is left behind is going down with Requiem.
Oh.
Literally. To melt in eternal hell, essentially. Being melted away by a star. Anyways, so that concludes the cutscene for episode 10. Really short, just kind of wrapping up the story from a narrative standpoint on the cutscenes, and it leaves us with one very important objective. Disable all the artifacts and get the hell out of there.
Yeah. I'd say that's pretty important.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead and jump right into things. Chapter 1, Artifact. Shield World Requiem is highly unstable and on trajectory to collide with Sun. Fireteams Crimson and Majestic in pursuit of artifacts needed to halt planet's course. They really need to work on their descriptions.
Yeah.
Because they're not that great. And their grammar could use some work, too. Anyways, the map is on Harvester, and the objective is to locate the Forerunner artifact. So while Majestic is off looking for artifact number one, Crimson's been sent to go find artifact number two. Of course, like they said before in the cutscene, these artifacts have to be deactivated in order to free Infinity from Requiem's hold. So as soon as you drop off, of course, you're met by Covenant opposition. I mean, that's kind of typical. They're probably still waiting to be evacuated, or maybe they're staying behind. Who knows? But they're obviously there to prevent you from getting to the next artifact. It's likely that...
Real quick, it's interesting to note that we're starting on the other end of Harvester.
Right.
You know, from where we started the last time we were here.
So we're actually on the open end of Harvester, where the last time we actually spawned in on the canyon side.
Right.
So, yes, that is important. I mean, it's not too important because they could probably do the same scenario either way, but it's just you're starting off at a different place.
Mm-hmm.
To help you kind of get through Covenant forces pretty quickly, because time is kind of precious at this point, you do get a ordnance drop of rocket launchers. I think there are two or three rocket launchers that get dropped.
Yes.
And Lieutenant Murphy stands by a little bit after you get dropped off to give you some supporting fire until you make your way deeper into towards the Harvester.
It's a good thing, too, because there's several hunters.
Are there hunters at the very beginning?
Oh, yes, there are, my friend. I played it earlier today. Yeah, there's several hunters that you have to kill there. So it's a good thing that he sticks around and he helps to, you know, take those hunters out for you. And the good thing is, you know, while we're podcasting this, this week is episode 10's redux for, the Spartan Ops matchmaking portion. So you can go through this and play it for more credits. And indeed, that's one of the things I did was play it And
that's going to be weird. Not having new Spartan Ops episodes come out every so now and then. It's just going to be this repeat of the Spartan Ops episodes we already have, plus just this probably a mix that they're going to do, like a director's cut kind of thing, like they've been doing in the past.
Yeah, developer's choice and thing. Yeah. But the good thing is there's a weekly challenge for hunters and Spartan Ops. I believe it's 50. So this mission is real good for that. So
they had that actually when the premiere of episode 10 was there too. So I shouldn't be surprised.
Right.
Cool. So after you make your way through the cave, cavernish, whatever you want to call it, canyon system, there's some of these geological features that I'm not very first with. So sorry as I stumble through them, guys.
Yeah, they're really more like arches, but they don't refer to them like that.
Right. You're making your way to the harvester. How about that?
Yeah, that works.
At least you're given an objective marker, and it's like, this is where you need to go. Okay, the path is pretty straight towards the harvester, so you just follow the path. Pretty self-explanatory. Once you get down to the harvester, you try to get inside to figure out what's going on, and of course, Covenant have put up a shield against it, so you obviously cannot get in there.
So you gotta go for some jackal snipers, as well as turrets with, usually they're armed with elites, sometimes grunts.
Right. I was going to get there, but thanks for covering.
Sorry.
You covered. No, you're good. You're covered. This is a duo podcast, by the way, not singular. So good. So yeah, watch out for the jackal snipers and, mounted plasma turrets. There's actually kind of mounted plasma turrets from here on out, because the Covenant is basically going to try to stop you every step of the way from achieving your objective. So just whenever you're going around, just expect sniper beam rifles, expect fuel rod cannons, expect plasma turrets, and there are plenty of Lancer knights and other heavy weapon knights and crawlers and all that fun jazz.
Well, in later chapters. This chapter, thankfully, none.
Right. There aren't any Prometheans here except for the turrets, which we'll get to in a moment.
Right.
But I'm just saying, from here on out, you're pretty much running into high-ranking, heavily armed enemies from here on out, essentially.
As it should be, though, being the last episode, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's your final run to essentially survive at this point, because Requiem is falling into its star, and you're pretty much stuck there until you free Infinity, which of course is all fun. You're on the clock, theoretically, even though when you're actually playing, it's not, which is another beef I have with Barton Us, but yeah, that's for another podcast.
I definitely think we should have had some timers on these episodes.
Yeah.
At least this particular episode could have definitely dealt with that.
We will talk about that in a follow-up podcast after this one, of course.
Sounds good.
There's lots of little things that we'll talk about for Spartan Ops, and I'm sure there'll be a podcast we'll talk about all the little nuances of things that they could have done better, what they should have done, what they should have not done, and all that good stuff.
Right.
So that'll be for a later podcast. So sorry, we'll try to keep the tangents to a minimum, but just in case we get there, sorry in advance.
Yeah, we'll get there. We usually do.
Right. Also, when you get to the harvester, you actually are given the objective to the artifact, and the artifact really isn't there. There's just a giant rock. And of course, Miller calls up Glassman and is like, okay, they're there. We don't see anything. And Dr. Glassman is like, it's inside the rock. Oh.
Great.
Oh, great. And now, since we already discovered that the harvester is protected, they put up a shield. Now we gotta find a way in, which is even more of an issue, because when Miller calls for Dalton to bring in some air support, it turns out that at the moment there's nothing he can do, because there just happens to be some anti-air Promethean turrets that doesn't really sit well with Dalton to send in air support.
Yeah.
Miller thusly responds by sending Crimson in to go take out the Promethean anti-air turrets. Along the way, they run into some more Covenant forces. It's the typical bunch of fuel rod cannons, a couple sniper jackals, grunts, and the mix thereof. And it turns out the anti-air turrets that are there are actually protected by some Covenant shields. Roland, of course, being his superior self, figures out that the passwords or passcodes that they used on the shields for the Promethean turrets are actually default. So here's a lesson to you kids. Change your default passwords.
Yes.
So he easily hacks the shields on both of the turrets, making them completely vulnerable to heavy fire. And hopefully by this point, you've picked up some of the fuel rod cannons that have been dropped by the Covenant, or maybe you've managed to keep some of your rocket launcher ammo in your back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You can use the heavy weapons to take out the Promethean turrets from a distance, not having to go too far into the fight, or just kind of run up there and take it out while you're kind of meandering among the Covenant there. Spartan Dalton will give you another drop of rocket launchers, three rocket launchers there if you don't have any heavy weapons, which I kind of find hard to believe at this point because just of how many heavy weapons that are there around you. Yeah. But just in case you don't, Dalton does drop some rocket launchers for you to pick up. And another good reason to use the new ones is you may use all your heavy weapons on the first two. And there's actually a third one up on the outer side on the canyon where you actually came in the first time you were at Harvester. And you can use the rocket launchers on those. Once you get there to the top one, it does take some time for Roland to actually hack the shields. And a Covenant Phantom will drop another load of enemies, including two hunters. Yep. So there's another pair of hunters that you have to deal with. And of course, you have rocket launchers, so they're not too hard to take down. It does take some time because they are hunters, and they are, depending on what difficulty you're playing on as well. And right. Most likely, if you're playing co-op, you're either doing heroic or legendary.
When I was played this earlier today, this is the first time I've seen it. I shot a rocket at one of those guys, one of the hunters, and it brought its shield up, and it deflected my rocket. I've never seen that before. I figured, just pop off some armor or something like that. And
I'm guessing it's a glitch.
It must have been, because it pinged and went the opposite direction. Not towards me, but, I mean, it bounced off and went a different direction. I was like, what the hell?
I'm guessing that was a glitch.
I wish we would have theater for this. That was something that I would have loved to have caught on video.
Yeah. Would have been even more funny if it came back in your face and blew you up.
Well.
That would be a RT fail right there.
Yeah, definitely.
Fail of the week.
It definitely would have been.
Yeah. So once you take out the hunters, there's a couple other Covenant that the Phantom drops. I think a couple of grunts and a few elites. But take those out. Take out the final turret and then make your way back down to the Harvester.
You know what's real funny? Real quick. I don't know about you, but it seems to happen for me most of the time that when I take that third turret out, then I get more rockets from my rocket launchers. It seems like I always take it out before I get that weapons drop. Have you had that happen to you?
I'm not quite following. What do you mean?
When you get up to that third turret.
Yeah.
Well, usually I have some fuel rods left or some rockets left. So I'm able to take that out, and then it's not until after I take out that third turret, then I get more rocket, ordnance drops. And it's like, well, wait a minute, what do I even need these for? I've already taken out the third turret. It seems like it's happened to me every time. Now, I don't know if that's been your experience or the listener's experience out there.
I've only played it once.
Okay.
Remember, it's been like this for the past 3 episodes.
Yes, and you did that with me, and it was, and I'm pretty sure that was the case.
I mean, I can pull up the footage real quick.
Yeah.
And continue talking on from there.
Yeah, but I just found it strange that that's when I always seem to get the ordnance after the third turret's already destroyed, which I'm not really complaining about because it's always good to have heavy weapons to take out other enemies along the way.
I guess there could be another weapon drop at the end. I just don't remember seeing one. But, I mean, that could just be me not paying attention either. But I'm looking right now. And after taking out that last turret, I don't see it. Oh, yeah, there is a... Yep, there, you're right. There is a third rocket drop.
Yeah.
There's two rocket launchers. So I figure since they know you're going back to the harvester, they know that coming there are going to probably reinforce the position that they're going to give you some more heavy weapons, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that seems to make sense. You don't need it to take out the third turret, that's for sure.
Right. So I'm not... I guess... I mean, it's a... Not complaining. It's rockets.
Like I said, I'm not definitely not complaining. I'm all more than happy to take heavy weapons, you know?
Yeah, you're fighting heavy weapons. You might as well be given heavy weapons to fight them, right?
Yep.
So, there you go. As you make your way back down to the harvester, you're going to have two drop pods deliver some more Covenant enemies. And, of course, these are also heavily armed with fuel rods and sniper rifles and everything in between. When you get to the harvester, there's one more that you have to address with the enemies that get dropped. Once you clear those out, Dalton will send in the Pelican that will come and give you some firepower to knock down the shields of the harvester. And it just so happens to be Lieutenant Murphy. We've been dealing with him for the second half of the entire season one. So it's good to have some familiar faces helping you at the very end of the world, so to speak.
Yeah.
Literally, the end of the world.
Literally.
The Pelican will...
I mentioned to you real quick the glitch that that happened to me today on this. You mind if I interject that?
Well, I haven't even gotten to where the Pelican lands yet.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Sorry. And that kind of has to happen. That kind of has to happen, I think, before your glitch, right?
That's right, yeah.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
That's okay.
But Murphy comes in with the Pelican, hovers over the kind of center rock that's there, and will start unloading his machine gun on the shield door. And about after 4 or 5 bursts, the shield door finally pops. So if you want to insert your glitch now, go for it.
Okay. So I just happened to be playing this again. I went through all the missions except for the last one today just to refresh myself on these. And I often try to get up, you know, in places where we're not supposed to. And I usually try and get on top of the Pelican for the heck of it. I know in certain missions you can actually get on the Pelican. You can actually get on the topside turret. But the problem usually is that whatever action's happening at the moment, it doesn't matter if you stay there because it leaves. So even if you get into the topside turret, it doesn't really help anything. So I tried it anyways, and sure enough, I got on top of the Pelican. And I stayed on it for a little bit, and as it started to fly away, I jumped off and flew towards the harvester. I didn't think I would make it, but lo and behold, I did. And not just that I made it, but I was able to make a couple of series of jumps and then jetpack up further, and I got on top of the harvester. So it is definitely possible to get on top of the harvester.
So, I'm calling April Fools on you.
Oh, God. I will show you.
I'm kidding.
This is not an April Fools. Believe me, it's not. Unlike a post I put on my blog, but that's another thing. Anyways, I got on top of it, and it was pretty cool. So I kept going as far as I could, and I got to just cresting over the highest point of it. So it was kind of on its back. And when you get to that point, you could actually see into the harvester, but it wasn't into it. It was through it. You know how just sometimes when you can see through certain objects in the maps, you actually are seeing...
Yeah, it's not textured on the other side.
That's right. So that's what I was seeing. Well, okay. So I thought, well, okay, that's interesting. You know, I didn't want to go too much further because I didn't want to kill myself, you know, fall off the edge or whatever. So I start making my way back down, back where I came from, start jumping down the front of the harvester, and oh, all of a sudden, there's an invisible barrier. I can't get back down to the ground. I'm like, what the hell? So I'm floating there. I'm not jetpacking. I'm not running or anything. I'm just floating there. I can, you know, point my thumbstick in the direction I want to go, and it goes that way. But he's just kind of floating there. I threw a grenade thinking, okay, well, maybe the grenade will hit the invisible barrier. I'll blow myself up, and I'll just go ahead and, you know, start the mission from there. Didn't happen. It went through the barrier. I shot the rocket that I had. It went through the barrier. I'm like, well, damn, I'm stuck. So I had to go and get back on top of the harvester. And I figured, let me just go ahead and see how far I can walk out. And sure enough, after I got past that point that I was before, a little bit further, then the barrier's gone and you fall. And I couldn't save myself because I was way too far away from other things, so I ended up dying. But that's a little glitch there for you all to try and see if you can get to maybe some other places. That's something I'm definitely going to explore. It was something I enjoyed in Halo 3, being able to get outside the maps and you know, see where everywhere else you could go. So there's a little helpful tip for you there. Again, I wish there was theater so, you know, I could catch, you know, capture that, but I'm not like you yet, Mr. Duststorm. I don't have a nice little capture card, but I will eventually.
Capture card or microphone.
Yes. Yeah, I have a built-in microphone.
That doesn't count.
So, anyway, so that's where we're at.
Very nice. So after the pelican leaves and after it's done its work for you to get inside the harvester, you make your way in and you, of course, run into some more Covenant that have stayed behind and either didn't receive the call to evacuate or are just kind of caretaking the harvester. Of course, it doesn't really work, so there's really no point of them even being there in the first place. When you do get inside, you hear this call over the radio from a scientist, believe it or not, Dr. Dennis Russell. He's like, hey, there's Spartans. There's Spartans outside. maybe we're saved. I don't know. I see Spartans, though.
Have you taken a look at those scientists? Like, when you went through it, did you look at them closely?
Not really. Should I have?
Take a look at them. They looked an awful lot like Lasky. All of them. They were all the same kind. You know, it wasn't like they were different scientists. The only major difference was that their hair was more blonde. But if you look at them, if you gave them brown hair instead, they look like Lasky.
I think that's just lazy design more than coincidence.
Well, I don't want to call it that, but...
Well, I'm calling it. So once the area is clear of all Covenant, then Roland will point out where the two shield generators are, or the controls for the shields, and you go around and hit those two controls, the shields drop, and then you save the scientist. Yay!
Yay!
Yeah, and Dr. Russell actually come out and say that the Covenant were trying to have them fix the harvester. But, of course, the power supply is shot, and, well, you can probably remember who did that before. Guilty.
We did.
Yeah, we did. So, I think Miller kind of forgets this way back when, because it's like he has Crimson go check the power supply, see if it's actually not working, and when you go to try to turn on the harvester, of course, it kind of whirs up, and then it whirs down like it's not working. And we could have told you that. We intentionally crippled it so it couldn't come back online.
I think Miller has ADD.
I don't know. I mean, it is kind of the end of the world, so you are kind of a little scatterbrained as well.
Yeah, I guess.
But as far as the harvester being functional, yeah, fat chance. So it comes down to, all right, well, we got to figure out how to get this working. In the meantime, let's get the scientists out of here. Miller calls in the evacuation for the scientists, and then Roland comes up with this plan. It's like, hey, I know how to figure this out. There's a power supply suitable that's not too far from here. If Crimson can get a pickup, then we can probably go and get it. So
okay.
We're off on the whim to go see if we can find this mysterious power supply. And with that, I need some statistics from you.
Some statistics. Okay. There are.
I think you did that last time as well. I asked for that.
I might have. Yeah, maybe that's getting old. I don't know. I have it at roughly, let's see, for Jackals, this is actually fairly decent. And considering there is a challenge for Jackals this week as well in Spartan Ops, I believe it's 250 Jackals. I think it might be more than that. But anyways, there is roughly 36 Jackal Rangers on here and about 8 of the Jackal Majors. So, you know, if you're looking to get some Jackal kills to get the challenge and you want to go ahead and play these missions for this week anyway, since it's, you know, those are the ones that are queued up for Spartan Ops matchmaking, then this one of the five episodes, or rather five chapters this week, is the one to do it for. There's a bunch of grunts, as you would expect, about 30 regular grunts, 10 Imperial grunts. And then beyond that, the other number that kind of sticks out is that there are 8 elite generals. As you were mentioning, you know, they kind of bring out the heavy guns for this. So you'd expect to have, you know, the high ranking elites. And in fact, there are. So this is a really good episode for that. There are no Prometheans, not including the turrets, but ones that count for commendations. There's none for that. But certainly if you want to get, you know, some Covenant kills out here, and especially this week with the challenges, including those, the hunters that we mentioned, this is a good one to do. I would definitely repeat this one a couple times this week and get those, challenges done.
All right. Moving on to chapter 2, In One Way.
Out the other?
I don't know. Maybe. Fireteam Crimson is en route through Warrens to acquire the replacement harvester power supply stored at Apex. And as you can tell, the map is on Warrens, and your objective, navigate through Warrens to Apex. So, of course, you are moving through Warrens because Fireteam Crimson's Pelican, piloted, of course, by Murphy again, yay, is not really able to land at Apex because of all the anti-air that has been established at Apex. So you're kind of diverted back to Warrens, which actually will lead you to Apex. So you're going to kind of take a little bit roundabout route until you can get up there and retrieve the power supply. So you are dropped off right at the front door, almost nearly being taken out by a Wraith tank shell, actually.
Yeah.
So good thing we have Murphy on board, because he's a pretty good pilot by the looks of it. I mean, he dodged a Wraith shell, which is pretty impressive.
And he did, if you recall, he got us into the Infinity. Although we took a hit, he got us in there, and we were able to survive back in...
And he managed to survive somehow.
Yeah.
I guess at least Covenant know how to make their ships to where it protects people inside. I guess they have one thing going for them on that. So once you get dropped off, you are kind of faced with a few Covenant, not too many. A bulk of the force that was there at the beginning is off further along the, they call it the beach, although I don't really call it, it doesn't really feel like a beach to me, but further down the beach where you have normally landed in the past is where the rest of the Covenant forces are. And just in this, at the door front, there's just this kind of small force, but Miller still feels the need to call a Dalton to issue a
airstrike.
That's the word. Thank you. An airstrike on the area. And all the airstrike does is take out the sniper towers. It doesn't really even do anything, because by the time the airstrike comes down, you've already taken out the two jackals in the towers, because they're the easiest things to take out.
Usually, yep.
So kind of wasted effort, I think, but I guess appreciate all the help you can get. Once all the Covenant in the immediate area are wiped out, Miller will tell Crimson to go check the door, and of course it's locked. So he calls on the help of Roland to get the door unlocked, and of course he magically makes things work, get the twitch to the door, comes online, and they proceed through into the cavern of Warrens. Yeah. Making progress. That's good. Although we need to kind of pick it up a little bit.
Right.
So once they get into the cavern, they hit basically a flood of Covenant forces. Everything from plasma cannons to plasma turrets to ghosts and everything else in between. Spec Ops elites, jackals, grunts with heavy weapons and all that good stuff along the way. You are making your way to the rear Forerunner facility, to the door that will actually lead you up to Apex. And once you get there, of course, you find that the door is locked. Another locked door, which we've kind of run into those quite a bit now. You would think we would have kind of a master key set at this point, but it still turns out that there's still some doors that we can't open. But after finding out the door does not unlock, we have to go activate the light bridges to go figure out how to possibly power the door to get it, or to at least present the switch so we can open it. So we go activate the light bridge controls, and that, of course, activates the same light bridges as before, and hopefully by looking around at some of the other foreigner structures, we may be able to find something that may help us out. Maybe.
Maybe.
Possibly. Of course, some more Covenant drop in. I think there's a Pelican that, or not Pelican, Phantom that comes drops.
There is.
Some Covenant on that initial little tier, like right when you're going out away from that foreigner structure and you go up to the right, that what I consider the second level of the whole kind of platform area of the inner cavern.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
There's a lot of different levels in there, though. So.
Yeah, there's like, I would consider maybe like five different levels.
Yeah. It can get confusing trying to describe them, so yeah.
Yeah, it's a little ridiculous at times. I wish I knew my topology terms a little bit better. So, whenever the fighting does cease, though, with all the Covenant, Crimson makes their way up towards that top forerunner structure, and of course they are met by some Prometheans. And of course, some of them are Lancers, and of course, Lancers have nothing but binary rifles. Ouch. Yeah.
They're pretty easy to get taken out by them. And don't forget, you know, the term Lancers, as soon as you see them, they take this kind of a certain stance, and then they do like a quick little shake. You know they're going to come after you. And they do that quick kind of a teleporting thrust towards you. And if you don't,
it's not exclusive to the Lancer. It's just they do it kind of frequently in this last episode. It's not just the Lancers that do that.
You sure?
Yeah.
I don't ever recall other ones doing that.
Yeah, the ones with the kind of like needles or thorns on their back. I've seen them do it before. Yeah, they've done it before.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not just a Lancer thing.
Okay. Well, I don't recall knights or commanders doing that, though.
Maybe not commanders. I think knights have those as well.
Well, regardless, let's just say this. Watch out for that in this area, for sure, because they do take advantage of that ability.
They do. And is it just me, or does it seem like the Lancers actually shoot the binary rifles a little bit quicker than the other classes of Prometheans?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if that's just the urgency of this episode in particular, or if that's actually something that the Lancers can do and actually fire those things quicker. But it seems like they have the ability to fire them just a tad bit faster. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. It feels like it anyways.
Okay, so it's not just me.
No.
So when most of the knights are done, are taken out, there's a place where you can actually still have a couple left in the prompt to activate a switch comes up. But for the most part, you take out most of the Prometheans that are there kind of guarding this upper forerunner structure. And then you proceed to this marker that Roland has placed up for you. It turns out that his plan to get through the door is to actually overload the locking mechanism that is actually holding the door shut. And to do that, there's a couple of power nodes that Crimson has to go around and activate to basically overload the locks. So the first one is up in that foreigner structure, and then the two other little kind of foreigner platforms.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that kind of overlooks the middle of the cavern that's kind of high up, and then there's that ground level one that's the first one that you usually hit when you're going up the pathway from the big foreigner structure.
Yeah.
So at those two locations is where the other two are going to be. And when you actually try to go to the other two locations, you're going to have Prometheans phase up right on top of those locations trying to defend them from you activating them. Of course, they're just kind of reacting to what you've done before. And I mean, Prometheans probably know their own technology. They're going to try to stop you from doing anything that makes you progress to your objective.
Right. Right.
Once you activate all three nodes or conduits, then the door overloads and you start making your way back over to the big foreigner structure. Once you get there, then I think there's another wave of Prometheans. Is that right?
I'm looking here. I believe so.
Okay. So, yeah, yes. there's, there's another wave of Prometheans that you have to defeat. But after that, the controls are there for you, and you make your way through to Apex. So, not too bad?
Yeah, not too bad.
Not too bad. It is a little frustrating having to jump from kind of foreign structure to the forerunner landing and all that good stuff, but...
Yeah.
All in all, this is a pretty simple kind of straight through. Compared to the rest of the episodes, this is probably one of the lighter enemy handouts, I think.
Well, as far as total enemy counts, this is actually
towards the
higher end in this episode. But
I guess it was just how it's laid out.
Yeah, how spread out they are. You never really feel completely overwhelmed, and because they're on different, it's a big map to begin with, and then it's also, because it's a fairly vertical map as well, you're not facing a ton of enemies at any one given point. So it never feels like it's as many as it actually is.
Okay. Mr. Statistics, why don't you give us the rest of it while you're at it?
Sure. Not too bad for crawlers here. About 24 regular crawlers, about 12.5 primes. And you do get a bit of watchers. You get about 20 watchers with this. On the Covenant side of it, from the beginning and a little bit of ways into it, there's really nothing that stands out. There's a little bit of Jackal Rangers, but as I mentioned from the previous chapter, there's a lot more there. So, this mission, because of, the enemy counts, and it's fairly easy to do, I haven't replayed this mission much at all. I played it, I think 2 times when it first came out. I played it once again with you, and then I played it, once again today. And I think that's the extent of it. I don't want to say that it wasn't exciting, but it didn't stack up against the other, chapters in this episode. And it's one that I could say, bypass it for another time. We'll see this, this same map again coming back through, and then it gets a little bit more exciting.
Agreed. Yeah. This is one where I guess it holds the least value of this series of chapters. I mean, it's important because it is kind of progressing the storyline, but.
Yeah, it's important to the story, but as far as replayability and excitement of the 5 chapters of episode 10, it's probably the least exciting of the 5.
Right. Okay, chapter number 3, Seize the Power.
Power.
Power. Numerous pelicans shot down trying to recover the power supply for the Covenant Harvester. Fireteam Crimson is searching for survivors while recovering the replacement part. The map is on Apex, and your objective, recover a power supply for the Harvester. So at this point, Crimson has ascended through Warrens up to Apex, and you actually come out of Apex at the very bottom, in where the foreigner structure actually is kind of noses into the bottom of, I guess, is this kind of like a floating island type thing?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is actually the... from some of the playthroughs that you've had on this map previously, there's always been this little area shielded off, and it turns out that the shield right there is actually the path that leads down to Warrens.
Right.
So we finally have this connection between Warrens and Apex. It's like, oh, cool. So we emerge out from the bottom of, or from the top of Warrens into the very bottom of Apex, and you hit the switch, and then you move on out. Spartan Dalton will inform you that there's been some pelicans that have been shot down in the area, and to keep your eye out for anything that they can spot, any survivors, any equipment that they could use to get on the way. Now, there's one thing that happens in this mission that I think is kind of a slip-up on 343 Spark, because it only happens once, but the marker that you get for the first pelican is actually pointed out by Commander Palmer. Even though she's not on Infinity, even though she's not with you, for some reason, it's her voice and her little icon that comes up in the top corner. It says, and she's the one marking the first pelican for you.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, I totally missed that.
I don't know why. I think that might have just been a slight oversight.
Hmm.
But that's what happens. And it was kind of weird, because I don't think it was meant to happen like that.
Probably not.
Maybe this is the only time it happens.
Maybe they didn't mean for her to be on Requiem at the time when they recorded this.
Well, no, she's already there. I mean, we saw from the cutscene that she's already there being dispatched by Infinity to go find the other artifact with Majestic.
Hmm. I'm going to have to play that part of it through again and listen to that. Interesting.
So, and we actually cut this out earlier because we thought it was a screw up, but it turns out that the chapter 1 and chapter 2 description when they initially released episode 10 were exactly the same.
Yeah.
They copy pasta, it seems like, in a couple of places now where they shouldn't have.
Right.
Tisk, 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 343.
That's okay.
You gotta be professionals.
Unlike anyways. Us.
Yeah, we're professional. Well, I like to consider myself a professional. I'm not sure about you, but...
Yeah. I'm so, a professional. I'm just not saying it what.
Yeah, not going there. So the first pelican that you find is actually close by, right after you exit the tunnel into Apex. And you actually meet up with another Spartan Fire Team. So we can check off another team on our list. And this is Fire Team Forest.
Yes.
And it is led by none other than Gustavo Esposito. And I'm wondering if that's a slight shout out to Gus from Rooster Teeth.
I think that's a direct thing for him.
I mean, I'm not sure what Esposito means. I'm not Spanishly inclined.
Spanishly?
I don't know how you say it. I know that sounded really, really dorky.
Spanishly inclined. There's your words for the episode, folks. Spanishly inclined.
I should put that as a subtitle for the post whenever I make it.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a reference to Gus.
Yeah. Although he seems a lot more brave than Gus. No offense, Gus, if you're listening to this. So he explains that their pelican got shot down while they were trying to secure the first hill. So instead of them just kind of waiting around, and since Crimson's there, Miller tells Forrest to fall in line with Crimson, and everyone hops in the warthogs that are there. And there's a crate with BRs if you want to pick up a BR to maybe holster as a secondary primary weapon if you're rocking like a DMR or a carbine or something like that. And there are two warthogs there for you to pull, so if you're rocking a full party of four, you can actually fill both warthogs, as Fireteam Forest is comprised only of two remaining Spartans.
But so that's because?
They got shot down?
No.
I don't know.
A little bit later, you see, it's just barely up the hill a little ways. The other two are on a mongoose, one with rockets.
Oh, see, I didn't notice that, because I only played through it once.
Yes.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
So I guess there are the two Spartans from Forest holding down the Crash Pelican, and then we'll meet up with the other two in a second. But fill the warthogs if you have a full four party of people. If not, split the warthogs between your two or three and go ahead and push on through. Now, it's not a bad idea to go ahead and have the Forest guys get in the shotguns. And if you're running anything, if you're running something shy of four players when you're doing co-op, then it's okay to have one of them get in the gunner's seat, because they're actually pretty good.
Yeah.
They're not bad. The AIs have always been pretty decent at the gunner seat. They've never been good at driving.
No, they suck.
Specifically Cat.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So everyone piles into the warthogs and then you start heading up the hill. And there's actually not any opposition until you get to the kind of the top 400 structure where we've been before. And this is actually a big door that opens up to a basin that we have actually haven't seen yet.
Yes.
So new play space. I know Sal is very, very happy about new play spaces.
Oh yeah. Anytime there's something new, you know, it just adds that much more to it and shows, the foresight that 343 had when, building these levels. You know, all through Spartan Ops, as I started seeing these things happen, you know, and you start seeing these different areas that could be, you know, something that could be a switch to some other area. You start wondering, ooh, is this where there's going to be another area? Immediately when we played Apex the very first time, I knew that that door just had to be something. And sure enough, here it is. And I was so glad to see that thing open. And then the space that we go into after this, well, you and I have talked about it, I believe. This would be perfect for a multiplayer map.
Yep.
It is just a great map.
We're not quite there yet, so let's kind of backpedal briefly until we get there. And then we can go goo-goo-gaga over it. When you get up to the foreigner structure, there's a group of Covenant there that you have to take out before you can access the door controls. So they're kind of scattered in the immediate vicinity of the door. And then there's also some other warthogs and vehicles back in that rear kind of section that you can go past the door and drive into. It's closed off, and you've probably been there before, because I think on the last time you were on this map, you actually had to drive back there and kill some of the enemies there before you could actually call in.
You're talking about the loop, right?
Yes, the loop in the back, before you could actually call in, what was the other fire team? Fire team Lancer?
Lancer, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the last time you were here. I'm not exactly sure, but I think that was.
That sounds right.
So back there, there's a couple of ghosts, warthogs, and other things. I think there's a couple of plasma turrets, but they're not mounted, so you don't really need to worry about them too much. But if one of your warthogs does get destroyed, definitely go and pick one of those up. Or you can split up and maybe get some more firepower underneath your belt. After you clear out all the Covenant, you'll get the notification to activate the switch to open the doors, and then we open up into this basin that is really, really cool. Would be really, really fun for just big team Slayer, just massive FFA possibly. I'm not sure how like capture the flag objective would work, but
I could see it happening. I definitely could see it.
I don't know about capture the flag. I would definitely see something like Extraction, King of the Hill, Dominion working, but capture the flag.
Well, you'd have to use vehicles for sure for that. But you know, if we still had Race as a game type,
this would be a perfect map for Race. This whole place would be a perfect map for Race.
Perfect map, because there's so many. You know, it would be great for rally racing because of all the different jumps in the past that you can take on this. You know, I really hope that this map somehow makes it into the multiplayer, because it's just, it's a gorgeous map and it's well laid out. It would be such a waste to not have it in matchmaking.
I doubt they will.
Ah, it's a shame. It's such a shame. It's already built. It's there.
I honestly doubt they will. I mean, they don't want to take too much time of taking away part of the team to work on another section of Halo 4 if they're already bulkily engaged in Halo 5.
Well, yeah, but then there's that discussion we have about
second season Spartan Ops. Yeah, I know. So, I know.
You know, it's like, well,
yeah, here's the dream.
Yep. They're going to do a Spartan Ops season 2. They might as well do just a little bit of extra effort on this particular map and give it to us in matchmaking, you know?
Right.
But, you know, who knows?
So once we get into the base, and this is the big bulk of this mission, and actually this is my longest chapter in this episode. I'm not sure if it's the longest chapter out of my whole guide, but definitely of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Full page and a half.
I believe it.
Once you get into the basin, you will have the structure on the right, which is where the power supply has been indicated by Roland, and it is heavily protected by a shield. It's this big bubble. You can't really miss it. But you also see three other little bubble areas, and it turns out that those are the generators powering the shield to the big foreigner structure on the right, so you have to go around and take those out. You take these out the same way as you did in the campaign, so these generators actually generate their own shields, but you can walk right through them, you can drive through them, and basically just blow them up. I think one grenade will take them out pretty good, if not two grenades definitely will.
Mm-hmm.
You can drive warthogs in there and then have the gunner shoot out the generators that way, and you'll be fine. Get a ghost in there, do the same thing.
You can even take a warthog and slam it into it. And it'll disable. I've done that. I did it today.
You gotta be careful, because sometimes that will cause some decent amount of damage to your warthog.
True enough. Depends on the level of difficulty you're playing on.
Right.
harder the difficulty, then the more damage your warthog's going to take.
Exactly. Do watch out for ghosts and other covenant that are on the ground. There are some elites that are walking around. Very few jackals and grunts, but mostly elites, and I want to say possibly up to as many as 6 ghosts at one time.
Oh, there's plenty of ghosts. Yeah, I haven't really, you know, counted them out, but there's definitely enough there to harass you, that's for sure.
So I don't think everyone's in ghosts to start off with, but there's other ghosts that elites will get into after being in there for a while, and then they'll come chasing after you. So I think at the start there may be 3 or 4, but throughout the rest of the mission, there's a good chance that some of the elites will get in some of the other ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
So be very careful and cautious as you're driving around the big basin, because there are lots of places where enemies can hide, and there's lots of places where you can get ambushed pretty easily without being really ready for anything.
That's right.
Once you take out the 3 generators, then you will make your way up to the foreigner structure. There will be some Covenant Phantoms in the area that you don't really have to worry about those too much. It's really what's on the inside of the foreigner structure that you have to worry about. And it's essentially an unending wave of Promethean Knights. I remember when I was playing with you, I guess it was your second time, my only time. Mm-hmm. It seemed like the Knights were spawning infinitely. Because we were fighting for maybe good, 5 minutes?
It was a few minutes for sure.
When I went back and watched the film for writing up my guide, it seemed like there were possibly up to about maybe 16, 20 knights that eventually spawned there. I think one of the things is you actually have to take out the watchers first, and then the knights stop spawning.
Yeah, that's a big help. Hey, real quick, before you head into there, though, you were saying about the phantoms. There is one phantom that drops off a bunch of grunts right there, and they almost immediately turn into suicide grunts. And I'd say there's probably 6 or so at least of those. So watch out for them before you head into that forerunner structure. If you just kill one of them, it's enough that his grenades then, you know, pop off of him and kill the other ones. So just, you know, if you're doing this with multiple people, have one person at least watch for that.
Huh. That's interesting, because when I looked through my playthrough, there were no covenant that dropped from that phantom that immediately were a threat. So that must be a situational thing where, I guess, from my run through, it just so happened that they charged the hill.
Could be. Yeah, it's happened to me frequent enough that I made note of it.
Okay. So slight variations in gameplay. Oh, wait, now I see them. Okay. So no, you're right. There is a line of grunts. You're right.
Okay.
And that's what you get for only playing it once, folks.
Yeah.
And try to do a podcast about it.
Absolutely.
So, yes, do watch out for those grunts. I did see a line right there. I was actually more worried about the Prometheans, and then when I looked at the radar, I saw the grunts. So, yeah. There are, like I said before, a good amount of knights, and definitely focus on getting the watchers out first. I'm not sure what kind of influence they have on the knights spawning, but I have a good feeling that taking those out early will actually help reduce the number of knights that you have to fight.
Certainly.
Now, don't quote me on that, but I have a strong feeling that's the case.
Yeah. And the good thing is the area where where the Prometheans are at, they generally don't come out of that area. So if you've got a long range weapon, use it to your advantage before going in there and trying to, take the objective that you need to. I've actually been able to get a warthog into the area. There's a couple of covenant barriers that are in your way, but you can slam into them to a point where you kind of create a gap there. Not quite big enough for a warthog, but what I've been able to do is fit a ghost there and use the ghost as a ramp and ramped up my warthog up and over. You can easily use the chain gun on the warthog to decimate the Promethean forces.
I don't even think you need to really ramp it up in there. Even if you park a warthog out there, you still have pretty good lines of sight down one of the corridors to take them out.
Sure. It's just the ones that are in the furthest back area that might be a little harder to get because they're higher up, you know, and they tend to gravitate towards the middle where you can't really shoot from that gap.
Fair enough. Once you take out all the Promethean knights, then you'll head into the center of the structure. Take out any remaining watchers that you may have missed, and then you'll actually have or be ordered by Roland to hit a button. Yes, we're hitting more buttons. no power supply that we've been told, and Well, it turns out that Roland just had you set off an alarm.
Bastard.
Which pisses off Miller pretty justly. Miller's upset and is like, Roland, why didn't you tell us what you were doing? And he's like, No, I have this brilliant plan. The A lich is going to come, and then Crimson's going to board it and take its power supply. And Miller's like, some foresight would have been helpful.
Yeah, would have been nice to know that.
Excuse me. Of course, this is really their only option at this point, so Miller's like, well, there's really no other choice, so I guess we're kind of stuck with waiting for the lich to come by.
Yeah.
So, Fireteam Crimson, or you guys, will wait for the lich to arrive. Mount back up in your warthogs or ghosts, whatever you were carrying into battle before, and be ready to fight lots and lots of Covenant.
Yeah, and at this point, it's definitely where this mission becomes much like a firefight game from Halo Reach was, because of the waves of enemies that keep dropping.
Kind of. There's other kind of aspects to the firefight I think are a little bit more applicable to other chapters, but sure. Yeah, there is certainly a feel of firefight in here. Of course, this is only they're all coming from overhead, and they're all from one source.
Right.
And you also have this kind of floating fortress that can shoot you from just about anywhere on the map unless you're kind of directly underneath it.
But then if you're directly underneath it, you have to worry about the enemies dropping out of it.
Exactly. So you're screwed no matter what. Good luck living through the whole thing without dying.
Yeah, you're looking forward to that part of our...
No, I'll be running on the outside of the map probably, and I have a feeling we'll probably have to do this one 4 or 5 times, if not more.
I'd say so.
It's going to be a nightmare. Anyways, eventually the lich will kind of be almost out of enemy troops as you kind of just blow through as quickly as you can with ghosts and warthogs. It'll shift positions a little bit, and then it'll activate its grav lift and drop some hunters. So it's not like you were already dealing with enough on your plate when you had elites and jackals and grunts falling to the ground and being basically pelted by plasma tank cannon fire. You're now having to deal with hunters.
they're throwing everything at us.
Oh, yeah. This is like the last big wave. I mean, we did set off an alarm, which I guess we're getting what came for us since...
Right.
Roland kind of tricked us into doing it in the first place.
Hey, just so you know, by the way, you actually can take out the grunts and the turrets and the lich. It is possible to do.
Yeah, you can. They're grunts and elites, and you can take them out. It's just they're so high up, and most of the time you're in vehicles where sometimes it's not the easiest thing to do.
That's right.
It is possible, though.
You know, if you got 4 players or even 3, I definitely would recommend using, you know, one of the... you know, your third or your fourth person to shoot from a distance and take them out. But if you're playing 1 or 2 people, you just want to stay in vehicles and just keep moving.
Right. After a little more time, after you defeat the hunters and what's mostly left of the Covenant Force, then the lich will move in to a position that's kind of on the side of the basin, opposite the foreigner structure, and basically present itself as an open target to be boarded. So Roland's like, okay, here's your chance. Go board and grab the power supply. And there's like, well, this is really the only chance we have. And while it's far-fetched, you might as well go for it while it's here.
Yeah.
Yeah. The rest of Fireteam Force will alert you to some jetpacks that they found in case you are rocking an armor ability that's not a jetpack, because you will need those to kind of get on the lich and get off. You can kind of sprint jump, although... you run the risk of falling off at that point.
You can also take a ghost. You can, boost a ghost
into it. Yeah.
But that's a hell of a jump. But it's very cool when you do it, though.
True. Or in Roland's terms, that we'll find out in a little bit, awesome.
What's that?
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of... that went over your head.
Yes.
Okay.
Say that part again.
So there's a line that... Roland says afterwards, after they accomplish their task, is like, it was awesome. And then I'll get to it, and okay. you'll figure right. it out.
Oh, you know what? There was something we forgot. Oh, wait, maybe that's an episode or chapter 4. Never mind.
No, it's in this one. We haven't gotten to the
end. I'm talking about something else. Believe me, when we get there, I'll let you know.
Okay. Once you board the Lich, Roland will report that he is unable to hack the Lich system. So instead of going to the control panel, the command panel,
cockpit.
The cockpit. Thank you. A little lost for words here. That Crimson should go directly to the energy core and pull it. What happens when you pull things out of places that basically provide power to a ship? It becomes unstable. It starts to fall out of the sky. So once you pull it, you run the hell out of there.
Definitely.
And I'm still unsure what this whole kind of like shield flashy thing is over all the Covenant stuff when they become unstable. It just doesn't really make sense.
I mean, you'd think by pulling the power supply, it wouldn't have the power for those shields to begin with.
So there's all. It's not even like it's shields. It's just like this kind of some kind of residual something.
Shimmering something. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't really make sense. I need someone to explain that to me. Really.
I just think it's a visual cue. You know, it's not really, you know, not meant to be.
Well, we've seen it before, in the campaign when we were fighting the Lich there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see some kind of explanation of. I mean, not necessarily just for. Like to go in line with the story, but just for the sake of knowing what's actually going on.
So it's something specific to the Lich you're thinking then.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyways, once you get off the Lich, then everything is hunky dory. And this is the part where I was trying to reference earlier. Roland's like, this was awesome.
Yes. There you
go. And then Miller was like, we're not looking for awesome. We're looking to actually get to fix this problem. And he's like, And Miller's like, it doesn't have to be awesome.
I think he said something along the lines of awesome is not a word I would use to describe a Spartan op. I'm pretty sure
that was not in here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We'll
go play it again. Okay. We need to play these episodes again. You only played them once, man. You need to play them again.
I've been writing the document.
I know.
So... you got the power supply, you're good to go, hop back in vehicles, and make your way out of there as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, Dalton still can't come pick you up because of all the anti-air that's in the area, so you're going to have to make your way back through Warren's and get picked up where you got dropped off initially.
But that's the next episode, or the next chapter.
Next chapter. Yeah. But there are some enemies that, when you're going back down to the entrance to Warren's, there are some Promethean turrets, there's some Covenant, but... you just drive right through them and you'll be fine.
Yeah, it kind of gives you a little reminiscent feeling of...
race!
Of, race! Yeah, well,
race!
Like at the end of CE, you know, where you have to race through. It's not, not the same thing, but it gives you just a slight, you know, a nod towards that. Not the same thing, of course. It's not anywhere near as long as that mission, but...
kind of. Not
one
quite,
of these times
kind
I'm going to have to go through and actually just kill everything. Instead of just, cause that's every time, that's what I do. I just get in a Warhog and I just race to the end.
Cause so much fun.
I play this, I'm going to try and kill everything.
So much fun.
Yep.
All right. So this map is our red versus blue Easter egg.
Yay.
Our final one of the season. So to activate this Easter egg, once you get into the basin, the part of the foreigner structure that sticks out and continues on to into land, there's a pelican has fallen and crashed right in front of it. Underneath that crashed pelican is the box to shoot for the Easter egg. When the Easter egg is active, the egg that happens is when Fireteam Forest is alerting Crimson to some jetpacks that you can use to get on the Lich, you actually hear Agent Georgia. This is one of the agents from the series that we have never heard of, and I think is supposedly dead. Sure. I'm not up on my Rooster Teeth lore too much to know, but if I remember vaguely, I think this was like one that was presumed dead or lost, and we have him here in Spartan Ops. And it's basically the same lines as saying, we found some jetpacks over here, but supposedly this is one of the agents that is basically not known where his whereabouts were, or that is kind of lost to the season or the Red versus Blue series. So with that, do you have some stats for us on this one?
Sure enough. Well, For grunts, you've got all told between the three main types that they break it down to. You've got better than 60 grunts. 40 of them are storm grunts, and then it's a mix between the last two. This level is, or this mission is good for elite zealots coming in at just under 20. And if you're looking to get some ghosts, of course, as we've seen, there's better than a dozen ghosts that you can shoot as well. Other than that, there's not a ton of Prometheans to worry about. It's really more a Covenant kind of stuff. Certainly, I highly recommend playing this level for that last part of the mission with, you know, where it's a new area. Getting some experience at driving or gunning, either way, and not having, you know, real people to fight against, but other, you know, but AIs to fight against instead. And it's just fun. It's, you know, take the jumps. This is one that I did play by myself, and I deliberately just drove around for a while before finishing the objectives and going over the jumps and ramps and just kind of having fun driving around. I don't know. I again refer back to what we were saying before. I would hope that this becomes a multiplayer map. I think it's a wasted opportunity if it's not. But again, going back to enemies, it's definitely good for your covenants, you know, for your grunts and elite zealots and ghosts.
Okay, moving on to chapter number 4, Out the Other. So kind of fulfilling the joke from earlier with chapter 2, In One Way, Out the Other. So making that full circle around. Pelican is dispatched to retrieve Fireteam Crimson and the Harvester power supply, but Covenant forces are converging on their location in Warrens. The map is on Warrens, and your objective, transport the power supply through Warrens. So this is the second time that we've played this on this episode, and we're making our way back from Apex after picking up the power supply in the last chapter. And of course, we're running into more Covenant opposition as they're still trying to prevent us from fixing the harvester and getting to the artifact. There's a lot of Covenant left behind that are trying to stop us.
Yeah.
You would think that they would have answered the call to actually evacuate, but I guess a lot of them feel all noble-like.
Yeah.
And are there to try to stop you from freeing Infinity from Requiem. So, to their loss, eventually.
Certainly for the elites, it's their honor thing, you know.
Right. Well, and then the elites are also basically commanding the rest of the Covenant there. So you have the Jackals, the Grunts, and then the Hunters. So
maybe they didn't tell them what was up.
I think everyone would have probably figured out because that's something that you really don't miss, especially when your fleet leaves and you probably lose a lot of the radio contact. So, yeah, I guess the guys that you're fighting are very, very devout. You'd think the devout ones would be a little bit better at fighting you off, but it doesn't turn out that way in the end. But we're not quite there yet, so we'll backpedal and head through chapter 4. So after you descend out from Apex back into Warrens, of course you're coming out of the big foreigner structure that was had the door blocked from before, and you meet up against more elites to start off with, and they're shortly joined by some other Covenant forces, and then not too soon after, you're going to run into some Prometheans that are going to be trying to stop you as well. Spartan Dalton will come on the radio and tell you that there's still too much fire coming from Apex and anti-air around there, that there's no way to send in a Pelican to come pick you up, so you got to address those first. Also, you need to be on the lookout for some other Pelicans that were shot down in the area, and they say look for some heavy weapons and some other equipment that you can use to possibly help get your way out through Warrens.
Some good stuff.
So there is some fancy toys that you will pick up here in a little bit. Miller comes on the radio after Dalton does his little thing. Is like, so we don't have really enough time or the manpower to really send in any kind of cleanup crew. So just find whatever you can find at the crashed Pelicans and use it to get out of there as quickly as possible. After a little bit, you fight your way through your first wave of Covenant, and you make your way up to the right-hand side, up to that little kind of second-level area. And if you go out to where the Banshees were when you were first here in Warrens, it's kind of out in the little tunnel area. Yeah, a little alcove area.
Yeah.
There's a Mantis.
Yay.
We've had fun with those before.
Definitely.
So you definitely want to have someone pick that up. There's only one. So if you're playing on co-op, which hopefully you are, because at this point you kind of need to be playing co-op.
Yeah.
Then have someone grab the Mantis, use it against some of the heavier covenants that are coming. There's going to be several phantoms that come drop in. There's actually a couple times where I think you may have been the Mantis. I don't know if maybe someone else was, but we were able to destroy the phantom before they actually left.
Yes.
So you can use the Mantis to destroy most of the heavy vehicles and a lot of the heavier armored Covenant and Prometheans that eventually come as well.
Really effective against the Knights, for sure.
Yes. Especially with the missile pods that it has.
Yeah.
Granted, the missile pod isn't too great at long range, but it will be useful long range for one of your objectives here a little bit later on. And of course, whenever enemies get close to you, you can shoot them with the missiles there, or you can use your ground stomp maneuver to mm-hmm. wipe out any kind of close enemies that may be trying to take you out very close.
That's a lot of fun, too.
Mm-hmm. As you make your way down the cavern, you will find that your exit is actually blocked by a gigantic shield. So that doesn't help.
No.
No. So your entrance that you came into Warren's on initially is now blocked by a gigantic shield. So now you have two problems. You have the anti-air turrets that are preventing Dalton from sending a rescue pelican, and then you have the shield that prevents you from getting out. So it takes a little time for Roland to kind of start messing around, trying to figure out how exactly to fix both problems. You do have to fight several waves of Prometheans and Covenant before he finally figures out an actual solution to the problem. And I think after like three or four waves, after most, if not all, of the immediate enemies are taken out, then he finally comes on. It's like, okay, I have an idea. You got to shoot out these three power nodes that are powering the anti-air turrets and the shield. So it just so happens, and I don't know if this is tied fictionally to the storyline of what happened when you were here before, but it turns out the same three energy pillars that you activated to overload the door to Apex are the same ones that you have to destroy.
Yeah.
I don't know if those are actually fictionally linked, or if it just happens to be coincidence and maybe the Covenant or Prometheans repurposed them after you left. So there's kind of a gap there of what exactly happens. So, I mean, take or interpret that however you want.
Yeah. Could just be a matter of convenience, otherwise I'd have to design something else into it.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's those three sites. It's those three Forerunner sites.
Yeah.
Again, so my guess would be it was probably repurposed.
Right.
So, yeah. Once you take out the three, there's two that become available to destroy once Roland figures out what's going on. And those are the two lower platform ones. So there's the one on that second level where
you got the Mantis.
You walk up and where you got the Mantis.
Yeah.
There's the next level up is kind of the one that's kind of the overhang into the center of the map.
Right.
In the center rock pillar. And then the third one is up at that very top Forerunner structure where you just get pounded by Knights every time you go up there. they're ridiculous. So after you destroy those three power nodes, power beams, whatever you want to call it, then Miller reports that the anti-air turrets are offline, the shield's down, and you can start making your way out of Warren's. Now, the Prometheans don't really take too kindly to this, neither do the Covenant, so you actually get quite a few Lancers that spawn, and those can be a pain, like we've noted in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, you're playing this on Legendary. Just expect to get sniped by them.
Mm-hmm. it's ridiculous. I actually don't think there's any Covenant that actually spawn after you kill all the power nodes, so I think I was mistaken about that a little bit. So it's just primarily Prometheans that respond to
Half of the cave. In this half of the map, I should say.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at my notes. After you after you take all the power nodes offline, I only see Prometheans that are spawning in this part. Until you get to the door, of course.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Okay.
That's what I mean.
So you'll make your way through the tunnel to the outer part of Warren's, out back into the open, and you do kind of run into a little problem as the door is locked, of course, and Roland begins to work his magic, and of course you get ambushed by a group of crawlers, but it's crawlers. You have a mantis. You have precision weapons. They're pretty much just toys at this point.
You hope you have a mantis at this point.
Well, when I think during our playthrough, we did still have a mantis. So, yeah. And we were playing with three people.
Was it three? Was it you, me, and what, Jack?
Or Eric.
Okay, could have been.
So I don't remember specifically off the top of my head.
It's all right.
But so this mission, you're basically just running and gunning, getting out as quickly as possible. Of course, during the whole process of you getting out, Requiem is still shaking itself apart or trying to hold itself together as it's straining under the gravitational forces of the star as it's approaching it. So after you get to the door and after you open it, you are greeted by three Covenant drop pods.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. And that's not the half of it, because when you move a little bit further on, you're greeted by two wraiths and several more ghosts, and then you have a couple other phantoms that come and drop some more Covenant your way as well.
Fuel rods and all kinds of nasty stuff.
Oh, it's like they pretty much opened the main party for you.
Yeah.
It's like you were doing your little piddly stuff now, and it's like, okay, here's the buffet of Covenant. I think the only things it was missing was probably hunters in that part. I don't remember seeing hunters specifically in that area.
Yeah, I don't think you get any there.
So that's fun. You get to fight two wraiths and several ghosts.
What? And they will chew your mantis up in a hurry. So, you know, get
especially
your shots
legendary.
Off from far if you can.
If you get shot with one shell from one of those wraiths, you're not quite dead yet, but you're pretty much gone.
Yeah.
Could you even take any stray fire from coming in about two, three more seconds, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
So be very careful when you're walking through there. I would definitely suggest picking up some of the other Covenant vehicles there when you get a chance. If you have the fuel rods from earlier on, or any other heavy weapons, definitely use those against the wraiths. Mm-hmm. If you manage to get close to one and board it, then definitely take it out with a grenade that way. But good luck doing that, because there are plenty of ghosts patrolling the area as well.
Yes.
It makes it a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
I mean very much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I found this particular mission was certainly this last part to be one of the more difficult parts of any of the missions, just because of how much and what they throw at you.
I guess it didn't really seem too much to me, just because I guess this is the 10th episode, so we're used to the playing style of Spartan Ops, and we have a freaking mantis on our side, and we know what we're doing. So I guess in terms of big battle scenes, yeah, this is one of the bigger ones, but it didn't seem too overwhelming if you knew what you were doing.
Right.
Of course, with all the kind of rock pillars and archways scattered about that area, it's definitely hard to know when exactly you're going to get shot by one of the wraiths or when a ghost may come around and just kind of surprise you, especially if you're on foot.
Right.
So use extreme caution as you're moving into the beach area here on Warren's.
Yeah, if you're playing this legendary solo, man, good luck. Especially if you're trying to do this on a no-death run. You got to take that slow and careful.
I don't know if it's even possible to do a no-death run legendary solo. And the reason I say that is because of Episode 5, Chapter 1.
Spartan Miller.
Yeah, Spartan Miller. That one is literally impossible to do solo. Because once you start trying to defend those terminals, you're done for.
True, true.
I think it's literally impossible. I mean, if someone can do it, more power to you.
Yeah, so there's a challenge. If somebody does it, you know, post to either one of us, we'd like to know. And, you know, you're going to have to send a link to your to that game that shows you didn't have any deaths and that it was on Legendary. I'd like to see that myself.
Yeah, well, then there's a possibility that someone mods it. That would be nice to have film of it, too.
Yeah, true, true.
Yeah, I would just see that as literally impossible. I think that's Spartan Ops is definitely engineered to be a cooperative spirit, not a single-player experience. I mean, I think we are going to even have problems with that part come when we do our heroic run.
Yeah.
For team.
I see it being an issue for sure.
So, so we got to the end of this chapter. You want to give us some stats?
Surely. All right. Well, this one's actually good for elites. There's 15 officers here, so that's it's a pretty high number for elite officers. Several elite storms. Those are the basic ones. You've got about 30 to 35 crawlers, 10 knights, 25 to 30 watchers. So overall, this has a fair amount of enemies to it. Certainly, you know, with the ghosts and the race as well, it makes this much more difficult as well to play. I actually like this mission. I like the objectives you have to go through, plus the, you know, several confrontations that you have to face up against, with the last one being, you know, pretty tough. So this one I definitely recommend replaying.
All right. Last chapter.
Ooh.
Final chapter. Actually, I haven't finished writing this one yet. I have a feeling this one would be another long write as well. I'm only about a third of the way done, and my write-up's already a good page or half a page almost.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Chapter 5. Our last one is Try It Again. Requiem's impact with the sun is imminent. Spartans deploy to Covenant Harvester with replacement power supply. The map is Harvester, and your objective, repair the Harvester and retrieve the artifact. Well, you're not really retrieving it. You're actually disabling it and leaving it there.
Right.
Anyways, see? Grammar check, people. Come on. It's not that hard. So
that's
what you're...
She said. Oh. I had to.
No, you didn't. So, of course, you can probably figure out by what's happening here is you have the power supply. You need to get it into the harvester, finish the Covenant dig, get in, find the artifact, disable it, and then get the hell off of Requiem as fast as possible. And do remember that you're still relying on Fireteam Majestic and Spartan Palmer to pick up their end as well. You're only one half of the equation, so you have to get your artifact offline, then they have to get theirs. So you're still kind of working in tandem with them, and once you're back on site, you'll hear this radio chatter between Miller and Palmer he tells her that you're on site, you're about to get to the artifact, and comes back and says, okay, we're almost at ours as well. So both you guys are imminent on your artifacts. You start off on Harvester at the top of the canyon side of the map area. And, of course, you're fighting your way through more Covenant forces that have reinforced the area since you left, of course, because they have nothing better to do. Right.
Well, other than getting the hell off the planet, but for some reason they just don't want to do that.
Oh, they're already left behind. I think all their fleets left.
Yeah.
So I think they're pretty much stuck. They probably got some of their ships probably got blown up when they were trying to fight us on Infinity. So a lot of them probably got stranded anyways. Oops.
Yep.
Wasn't such a smart idea to attack us, was it? Okay.
Probably not.
Nah. As you make your way down the canyon, you'll, of course, run into some heavy Covenant resistance, and the tremors on Requiem will get more severe,
yep,
more pronounced, more frequent, more intense, all that good stuff. So you just keep on pushing through all the Covenant until you finally get to the Harvester, and you can... once you get there, and once you wipe out all the Covenant on the way to the Harvester, you find a little resistance force. There's a couple of plasma cannons up there, there's a few of the elites, and you can just take those out pretty easily. The forces that you met when you were going down the path to get to the Harvester were more dangerous than the ones that are actually guarding the Harvester, which doesn't right. quite make sense. But anyways, take them out, make your way into the Harvester, and you'll, of course, see some more Covenant in there. I think there's a couple of hunters in here this time.
Let me take a quick peek at stats. I do see two hunters, yeah.
Yeah, so there are two hunters in here that you have to fight. I think there's one on each side. And there's, of course, some elite generals. I think some of them have fuel rod guns. There's definitely some jackals with snipers in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I mean, they're heavily armed. You want to take them seriously as you go in, but they're not too hard to take out. You've probably picked up some heavy weapons by this point, some fuel rod guns and some needlers and maybe a few other things that you can use against the enemies in here. And just take your time, go slow. You're technically not on the time crunch, even though you are on the time crunch.
You should be.
You should be. And this is goes back to the fact that we need timers in here.
Yeah. I whenever I face this, I usually just stay at the front door of the harvester.
And just let them come to you?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, and just hit them from afar, DMR, BR, whatever. You know, the snipers are easy to take out. The elites are actually not too hard to take out. It's just those hunters. But again, if you have, you know, the heavy weapons, then they're pretty easy. Yeah, I recommend not entering the harvester until you've taken out the majority of the forces on the left and the right, you know, that are immediately in front of you.
Right. And there's, of course, there are going to be some covenant that remain back in the back parts of the harvester or the central parts. So you're not going to be able to kill everyone. Everyone's not going to come storming towards you. But I think the hunters and some of the elite generals are going to stay back towards the rear. So even if you do wait out there, you do need to kind of be careful as you make your way into the harvester. Once you get in and eliminate all the covenant opposition, then Roland will mark on the console where to put in the power supply. Of course, it fits like a glove, and you put it in and activate it, and everything seems to be working all right. The control room to the harvester opens up. And
new area.
Yeah,
it is. Within the harvester, it is.
Yeah, but you really don't do much in there other than hit a button and get back out.
Yeah.
So, kind of, but Not too big.
It's not breathtaking, but
no, not
really.
It's just
nice to have something new.
No. So we actually get kind of an in-game cutscene here for a change. I don't think we've had too many in the second half of this season. We have had some other ones in the past, like the episode 3 where we saw the pelicans come drop in the mantises or manti. Yeah.
Manti tail? No. Sorry.
So once you go into the control room, you're going to hit a button and you're going to activate the harvester's drill, plasma drill, and it'll cut a hole into the rock, which will grant you access to the chamber, hopefully where the artifact is located. Once you do that, Miller will call out to Spartan Palmer and is like, okay, we have access to the artifact. We're about to go in. And on the other side of the radio, you hear gunfire from Palmer and it's like, just tell me when it's offline. So it's like, well, they're busy. Sounds like they're getting to theirs, so you might as well kind of hurry up, make haste, and get to your artifact. Get it offline as quickly as possible. So when you're back outside, make your way to the hole that the plasma drill created. And I like the cool effect of when you're going through, there's still kind of that molten red glow on the sides of the wall, and there's the heat waves.
I was just going to comment on that. Yeah, that's very cool that they did that.
That was a really cool effect. Once you get in the kind of first chamber area, that first cave, you're going to have 3 or 4 Promethean Knights spawn trying to prevent you from getting further into the cave. Once you take them out, you run to another wave of Prometheans, and this time they're crawlers. Make your way back into the back parts of the cave, and you come up on this other little foreigner structure, which is pretty cool.
It's a nice big new room here.
Mm-hmm. This is pretty cool play space, in my opinion. Yeah, this whole kind of inside cave. I would like to see a completely enclosed play space for war games.
Yeah.
Like this.
I was just going to say, this would be another great map, I think. You know, this could definitely be a good map for this, for war games.
One side objectives would be...
Oh, certainly.
Would be really cool in here. And Slayer, I think.
Definitely. Agreed.
So, there's just a lot of these cool play spaces that'd be really interesting to have. Of course, we can't have everything. There's been always cases from all the games where it's like, oh, this would be a cool multiplayer space, and of course there aren't enough resources to make all that stuff happen. So,
unfortunately,
while it would be cool, and just like the basin from Apex, I doubt we'll see it, but it's cool to kind of imagine playing in it.
But you know what, folks? If you want it to happen, make your voice heard. Go on the Waypoint and make those suggestions. Be nice about it.
You know a good way to make it happen? Halo 4 on the PC.
Ha-ha.
Maybe we need Halo 3 on the PC first, but...
Why is that?
Because Halo 3 on the PC would still be awesome. I mean, if Microsoft wanted to be a cash cow, I mean, release Halo 3 and release it the right way, you would get a significant number of people going out and buying that thing. Once you get, so back on topic.
Yes.
Once you get into the cave and once you get to that foreigner structure, there's some more Prometheans that you have to fight. Lots of knights and a few watchers. So, of course, take out the watchers first, then address the knights. And after a little while, you'll clear out the enemies in the area. You go try to activate the door to the artifact, and of course, it seems it's to be locked. Offline. Yeah, it's locked. And this next part, I don't know why it took me so long to figure out where you guys were going.
Yeah.
So the waypoint to the switch to turn the power on back to the door is underneath the foreigner structure, but I couldn't figure out how to get underneath the foreigner structure.
It really is a little confusing, though, because it's not like it's a direct access, you know? I mean, it's underneath something. It's kind of tucked in behind, you know?
So I was expecting like one of the ramps of the structure there to actually lead down to this area, and it's actually you have to go off the ramp down back onto the natural terrain and then go into a tunnel that goes underneath the foreigner structure that's still part of the foreigner structure.
Yep, right.
So it's like kind of the natural terrain either kind of took over or they just didn't build the rest of this out. So that's one of the reasons why I got confused. So you make your way down this ramp towards this bottom chamber where the switch is for this power supply. And there's three knights that spawn there. And here's another funny story. I got killed by the same Lancer three times in a row.
Yes, you did.
The same freaking Lancer. One binary rifle shot every single time. And Sal is kind of standing back here, slowly kind of strategizing making his way slowly down the ramps, getting a few shots off every time. I'm just running in there, throwing the grenades, and then getting some shots off. And then, of course, right on cue, the Lancer shoots me one time with that binary rifle, and I'm like, oh, crap. So once first time, I was like, oh, well, okay. I run back down there. Second time, I was like, oh, shoot. Then about the third time, I'm like, screw this.
Yeah. You're going to be frustrated then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually, we overcame them. We did defeat them, and then we got to the power supply. So that was nice.
Yep.
It took a little while, but we finally got there.
The power supply is this long blue shaft-looking thing that you have to press the button for.
Well, it's not really even a button there. It's just
something, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you stand there, you hit X to activate this thing, and then it just magically activates.
And it transforms and kind of folds in, and mm-hmm. It's a neat effect. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So once you activate the door or activate the power supply to the door, you go back up, open the door, and there's this big kind of cool looking chamber, and that's where the artifact is. And once you get in there, you get to the artifact, disable it, and of course, there's not a good response out of it. You hear Miller come on the radio, and it's like, oh, it doesn't seem like Requiem is very happy about that. So, of course, Requiem's already in kind of disarray as it's trying to not fall apart. Miller radios Palmer and lets her know that you guys have taken your artifact offline, and has Roland also tell Captain Lasky that the artifact's offline as well. We hear response back from Palmer and Majestic that they're trying to get theirs offline, but now's the time that you make your mad dash back to Infinity. So you gotta get out of there. Only thing is, it's not as easy as you may think.
No.
As you make your way,
stuff happens.
As you make your way out, Roland comes on the line. It's like, you may see some funky gravitational effects because of how close we are to the sun because of you deactivating the artifact. And, of course, about halfway off of the Forerunner structure, you get kind of jolted backwards into the side, and then the first time you're lifted up a little bit, and then you're slammed to the ground.
Right.
The second time, once you start making your way kind of through that
the cavern,
closed tunnel area back to the open cavern, you get flinged backwards again, and you keep running. And about this time is when you actually, the whole area becomes low gravity. So you get back out into the center chamber. You have some more really, 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 really devout elites preventing you from trying to escape. I think there's about 5 or 6 of them. And of course, the whole gravity effect makes it really, really interesting and really fun to take them out. Once you do take those Covenant out, you try to make your way back up to the top of the entrance where the where the hole got drilled. Once you get back out there, Miller tells Dalton to send in the evacuation to get you in. Murphy flies in as quickly as possible, picks you up, and takes you away, trying to avoid as much debris falling from the shell as possible.
Yeah.
Not easy.
Yeah, the planet's unstable, but wow, the outer Forerunner shell is, it's not unstable. It's breaking apart.
Yeah, it's falling apart.
I think it would have been cooler, and I think we talked about this. It would have been cool if we would have had the opportunity to take the Pelican and then have to fly and maneuver through the debris. That would have been pretty cool.
No, because you're not flying as Crimson. Murphy's flying.
I know. Well, they could have changed that.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Well, I'm okay with it, but I'm just saying that would have been cool.
Would have been cool, but not a deal breaker for me. Okay, stats for our final chapter.
Well, there's a whole lot of, I should say, there's a big variance of everything, but there's not a whole lot of any one particular thing. Really, the only things of note is maybe your elite zealots and some crawlers and battle wagon knights. But really, those are pretty low numbers. So this mission, you don't really play it for the commendations. It's certainly one to play, though, because it is the last episode, last chapter. And then I like the effects of the gravity just going haywire. But again, numbers-wise, per commendations, yeah, there's really nothing notable here, so you're not playing it for that. In fact, this has one of the lowest total enemy counts. In fact, let me take a quick look. It is...
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it's like the fourth lowest of all the 50 missions. So, you know, you're not really doing it for enemies. But
right, you're doing it for story.
Yeah.
Which is still pretty awesome.
Oh, definitely.
Yep. So this concludes our at least episode specific coverage of Spartan Ops. We will have a few more shows to actually talk about some of the other things. Like we mentioned a few times on this podcast, the whole using timers things, and we've mentioned in the past about using buttons and whatnot. So we will have shows to talk about that a little bit later on that will kind of continue a little bit off of this. We may just reincorporate those back into the main show line. So not sure yet exactly what we're doing with that, but we will have some more episodes. We will have definitely an episode 11 to talk about the epilogue.
Oh, gotta have that.
So that's we will do that. We are going to take a little break from doing these because I want to actually get my document somewhere along the way other than just trying to catch up for the podcast. So we will take a 2-3 week break before coming back and talking more specifically about the epilogue and some of these other features about Spartan Ops. So we aren't going anywhere. We're just taking a quick break, but we have we do appreciate everyone who has taken the time to listen to this mini series. And now that we're officially quote unquote done as part of the main podcast line for this, we hope you guys have enjoyed what we've had to say. Hopefully our opinions aren't too kind of out there, and hopefully they're shared mostly amongst the Halo community. I don't think we really strayed into too many wacky ideas.
No,
too often.
Not too often.
Not too often. No. So again, thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Halo Fan for Life for sticking out for 10 full episodes.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast. I enjoy it.
And we will see you guys next time.